Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, everybody. Today we are talking to Tim again. Excellent coach. Welcome to the Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel, live broadcast and podcast. And we are doing winter base training today for ultra runners with our favourite coach and physio, Tim Pickett from HP3 Coaching. How are you today, Tim?
Yeah, all good. Thank you very much. Talking about winter and it's not pleasant outside. Think about my run later on in the rain, but as the Scandinavians say, there's no such thing as bad weather, just inappropriate clothing. So just got to get wrapped up
in some decent kit. Yes, exactly. Yep. That. And I like the fact that you've moved us swiftly on to kit, because today the podcast and the live broadcast is sponsored by Soar Running. Let's just do a little shout out to them first. They're a high-end brand of trail and road running apparel, and they use the most eco-friendly manufacturing processes so that they can make the top quality gear that should last you a really long time. So find out more about that in my interview with Tim, a different Tim, not this Tim, Tim Saw from Saw Running, in the interview that will just pop up just there. So find out more about that there. And I wore this morning on my early morning, very cold winter run. It's the Saw Windbreaker, and it was really nice because I just had a t-shirt underneath and it was the only thing that I needed. It's got a really nice fleecy lined inner to it, which feels really nice. Really enjoyed that in the morning because it was quite crisp.
Nice and bright as well. Good colour for morning.
Yes. Yes, I was just about to say that as well. It's got these reflective bits on it as well. I'm just popping up a couple of pictures here of the windbreaker. It's got reflective bits not only on the cuffs, which you can just see there, but also around the waist as well. And it's got a little pocket in the back as well, so you can take keys and a credit card with you. And if you aren't satisfied, I didn't know this, I just found this out on the website just now. If you're not satisfied after running 100 miles in any Saw garment, you can also return it to them for a credit note to the full value of the item. So you really can't go wrong with like finding the right size or the right garment for you from Saw. And even better, as a Wild Ginger Running follower and watcher of the channel, we have an exclusive 15% discount, so check the film description below for the details, as that will change every single month. So check the podcast show notes as well, or the film description below. So thank you for that good segue there, Tim. I don't know if you meant to start talking about gear, but winter base training, my first question for you is, what even is it? What is winter base training, and especially for ultra runners?
Well, essentially, the base phase is laying the foundations for whatever else is going to come later. And how long that phase is going to last will depend somewhat on your availability of time before your next event. So classically, we're talking about spring and summer racing. So you've had your off-season, so you've done your last race maybe in the autumn. You've had a period of time where you've rested and recovered. And now we're starting to build back up again. So just getting back into that groove. And really, the bigger the foundation you can build, the higher you're then going to be able to build your peak. So we think about it a little bit like a pyramid. obviously the broader the base, the higher the peak you can get without the risk of it getting too narrow and risk of it toppling over. In other words, you get ill or injured. So yeah, we think about it as that foundation phase before you then start layering on top more quality work, more intensity. It's getting into the rhythm of training, whatever that rhythm might look like on a weekly and a monthly basis, or however you structure your training plan. Most people are working on a 7-day cycle. Do we have some people working on 10 days or 14-day type cycles? Or people on shift patterns might be on an 8-day cycle, for example. So, it will vary depending on the individual. But yeah, it's just getting into the rhythm, getting into the groove, laying those foundations. Most of it's nice and easy. The last time you and I spoke, we talked about reflecting on the previous season. So as part of that reflective process, you might have identified some particular areas that were maybe lacking in the previous season, or some areas where you struggled. Maybe it was you picked up a particular injury. You maybe identified you needed to work on things like your running cadence or your running form. Maybe you feel like you want to work on improving your speed. So you might have elements within this base phase where you're addressing some of those weaknesses while you've got the time and the resources to maybe focus on those weaker areas before you then start to, like I say, build and then ramp up into race season.
Because I was, the next question was going to be like, when is winter? Like, when to do base training? And I suppose it depends when your next race is. So are you thinking of winter base training right now as sort of like your first race would maybe be in March or April or something like that? Or it really depends on the person, doesn't it?
It depends on the person, depends on obviously the event that you're building towards. So in a very traditional sense in the UK, we'd be thinking about maybe your first A race of the year might be, let's say, a spring marathon. So let's say London Marathon, for example, or, the marathon we have in sort of March and April time. You only really want to mentally focus hard on a build for maybe a 3-month build for a particular race. So what happens before that? Well, we've got to lay those foundations so that when we go into that build, we're in a good, strong place to then knuckle down for the focused attention of building towards, let's say, a spring marathon. So what do we do in November and December? Because if January, February, March is prepping for those marathons, what do we do now? So that's the kind of winter base, laying those foundations before we then move into
the race. Exactly. Okay, so I've got a very important question for you here. So I've signed up to the Arc of Attrition on the 27th of January. So yes. Do I just like not have a winter base? Am I just build from now? Or some people might be training for the Arc, they might be training for like the spine race or one of the other, like the little, the short fun run versions of the spine race.
Yeah, that's it. The sort of the sprint, sort of 30 or more. So traditionally we're talking about winter base, because traditionally we're thinking about you're not doing an A race until the spring. But of course, the culture of ultra running has shifted in the sense that there are now an increasing number of winter ultra races. So they become your focus. So if you're racing in January, you've started your specific race prep already, so you're in that phase. So it's what came before that.
Yes. Okay. That was a different race.
Well, therein
race,
lies
a race, a race.
Yeah. So therein lies maybe another problem, is that it's very easy just to be racing, essentially all year round, mm-hmm. and you're constantly in race build, recover, race build, recover, and you never give yourself that off season. And you never give yourself that longer base preparation phase. And it is a potential risk that if you don't give yourself that time off, that you can end up burning out. So it's important to think about what races you're picking. And there's so many out there. I mean, that's the problem. There's just so many races. There's so much choice. certain individuals will be racing almost every weekend. One chap springs to mind. chap goes by the name of Toyota Crown. So anybody with a triathlon background might know the name Toyota Crown. Yes, that's the name of a car, but it's also his nickname. But he will do an Ironman race or an ultra marathon race or a marathon pretty much every weekend.
Wow.
He is the exception.
Yeah. And he's presumably like, this isn't his A race. He's like using them as a sort of a training thing, like just jogging along.
He just loves racing. So his training is racing.
Yeah.
so again, he's completely sort of at one end of the spectrum. But we come back to you and the fact you've got a January race, or if you've got people who are doing January races, you need to be looking at the whole season, that 12-month build. You might be needing to look at multi-year planning. Where am I going to put my off-season in this multi-year plan?
Ah, and should it be, the off-season? Because I did take October sort of off. And I felt really rubbish. I took like 3 weeks, not off running, but just like pootling about sort of running. And I started to feel really rubbish. So I said to myself that I would start training again in November for the arc to give me 3 months. But I actually started on the 26th of October because I was just like, I think energy begets energy. I just felt like I was like really rubbish because I wasn't doing any running, and I just had no energy even if I went out for a run. I don't know if that was part of my recovery process from, you know, those couple of 50 milers I did late in the summer. I don't know, I just felt a bit like not very energetic at all in October, and I don't know if that was because I wasn't running or because I actually did need a rest that I did give myself.
So everybody will be different. Some people, they just need maybe a week off, 10 days. Some people need 2 weeks off. Some people might need longer. But what do we mean by off? Yes. And I think the most important thing is the kind of focus, the intensity is dropped right off. You know, any training sessions you do are optional. And I would change the sort of language a little bit. So in this phase, you don't do training, you don't do sessions, you might exercise. So it might be going for a run, it might be going bike riding, it might be going climbing, hiking, swimming, playing tennis, something. So you might be active, but you're not training. And there's a difference there. And that difference is going to be physical, but a big part of it is going to be psychological. So when we're training for a particular event, you know, we have sort of training sessions that we have to get done or we really want to get done. But in this phase now, it is very optional. So if you wake up and go, I really don't feel like it today, fine. If you wake up and go, it's a nice sunny day, I fancy going for a run, fine. But there's no need to do certain sessions, certain intensities, volumes, it's all optional, it's relaxed. Historically, people would take 2 weeks, zero training, and then try and get back into it again. But of course, 2 weeks, we do lose fitness. And that's okay, that's not a problem, but we will lose fitness. So when we try and jump back into training again, if we jump back in too quick, because we've lost fitness, we can then essentially overtrain, even though we're maybe doing less than we were before. Yes. To that break.
Yes, I think that's what's happening to me because I've just like jumped back into training now and I've got my old injury that wasn't flaring up at the end of summer. It's the thing that just comes up on the side of my calf, and I thought, hang on a minute, that's probably something related to slight overtraining because it doesn't feel like overtraining because it's what I'm used to, but suddenly to put a backpack on and run for 2 hours is that's probably right. Overtraining compared to October. So yeah, I'm glad you said that.
What were you doing 2 weeks ago? Is what you're doing now significantly more than you were doing 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
And if the answer is yes, then you possibly jumped in at a higher level than you're capable of at that moment in time, even if it is slightly less than what you were doing 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So it's just appreciating that. So if we come back, traditionally we might have a block of zero training, completely off, legs up in the air, resting. And for some people that will be needed. And then when you do come back, it is a nice, very gradual rebuild. But for other people, it might just be 2 weeks of optional activity, just playing rather than training. Yeah, being sociable rather than training. It might be you just take 10 days. It might be just a week. It really depends on that individual. And of course, when you take it will also depend on what's happening throughout the cycle. So I've just started working with an athlete, and because of family commitments in the summer holidays, they're going to have their 2 weeks essentially off, which will just be going hiking with the kids in the middle of the summer. That will be their seasonal off. They will probably then have mini breaks at different phases of the yearly cycle. But rather than that being in sort of September, October, November, it's going to be in July. Mm-hmm. So again, you know, they will then build towards a late autumn key race, having had a break at the beginning of the summer.
Yes. And so, like, how long in total should the sort of the winter base, well, the base training be? I mean, we've got a question here from Sarah on, I think she's listening live as well, so she has written something additionally here, but she's written on the Facebook group for the patrons. How do you navigate training between races in the off season? Because she's worried about losing running fitness when she reduces her training load over the winter. So she was thinking about having an off season where she just focuses on strength 3 to 4 times a week. But would she then lose running fitness? So yeah, I think there's just a bit of a confusion into like how long the base training needs to be and what exactly we should be doing, which hopefully we'll find out now.
So how long it should be, the short answer is as long as possible.
Okay.
So it really depends on when the next build for a particular race is going to be. And obviously, depending on that particular race and the demands of that race, the build for that specific race will vary. You know, it might be that you're just building for, let's say, a half marathon, and you just need a 9-week build for a half marathon. It might be you're doing a marathon, you want to do more like a 12-week build. It might be you're looking for, you know, 50K, in which case it might be more like a 16-week build. 100 miler might be more like a 20 or even 24-week specific build. So it really depends on the demands of that race, where you're starting from and where you're trying to get to. So that will vary by the individual. So essentially what we're talking about is anything in between a rest. Now, whether that's a kind of end of season rest, whether that's a post-race rest and recovery, and the next specific. So it might be as little as a few weeks, or it might be as long as a few months. It really depends on you and the events that you've got lined up.
Okay.
So that kind of covers the distance and the time duration that winter base or that base phase will consist of. In terms of the worry about losing fitness, the short answer is you have to, because you cannot maintain this peak level of fitness for a race all year round. You will burn out. You will get broken. So you have to accept that your fitness will come down. Mm-hmm. The question is, how far do you let it come down? Because obviously the lower it drops down, the more it'll take to then bring it back up again. It depends on how much that peak took out of you as to how low you want to then bring it back down again. So for some people who are happily maintaining a fairly steady level of fitness throughout the race season, may only need to drop it by 10, 20%, that might be enough. Other people will need to drop it down by, you know, 40, 50%. It really will depend on the individual. But you need to accept you are going to lose some levels of fitness.
Yeah, and that's what you're supposed to be doing. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then you've got to ease back in.
You're then building that freshness back into the legs again. And again, yes, your fitness will come down, but it'll come back up nice and quick as well. So it won't take as much out of you to get back up to maybe where you were previously. Muscle memory is there. you've learned what it's like to build that strength up, to build that endurance. You know, the underlying conditioning will be there, so it will come back up again relatively quickly. It won't be as painful to get your fitness back up to where you were historically.
Yeah.
So that'd be a useful message, is just don't fear that fitness drop.
Yeah,
so, you know, if
yeah.
you're looking at your numbers on Strava or on Training Peaks and things like that, and you're seeing, you know, your fitness scores come down, don't worry, don't panic. They will come back up again. And that's a good, healthy place to be.
Yeah. And I think it sounds like a good idea to focus on strength, does it not? Like, I think a lot of runners overlook strength and don't build it into their plan as much as they should. So to focus on strength, maybe focusing on some weaknesses, like some areas of muscular weakness within the body, sounds like a really good idea.
Yeah, that's it. You know, if you're time poor, then generally speaking, you're going to need to focus on, you know, the biggest bang for your buck. So it's going to be sport specific. So it's going to be going out running. Now, you can build strength work into your runs, you know, hill reps, for example, you know, putting in some walking lunges, hopping, skipping, those kind of drills, build the plyometrics in. So you can build strength type activities into your runs.
Wow.
But of course, if you then decrease some of that running volume over the course of the week, that might then free up some hours in your days and weeks to then add in maybe a couple of specific gym sessions. So we can then actually get in there and, yes, lay some really solid foundations, build up your tendon strength, build up your power in the weights room, which will then transfer nicely to your actual running. Of course, in an ideal world, you'll keep that running going all season long. You know, that is just something that just sits in your program all the time. But it does depend somewhat on your time availability.
Yeah. And then I'm just thinking as well, like if you're dropping your sort of the amount that you're running and the intensity that you're running, do you need to sort of watch what you eat in just in case you just eat the same and then you just become really fat at the end of winter based training? Or is that part of it too? Is that like a hibernation thing, like with bears?
Yes. I would say sort of both of those points are true. So if your volume has decreased significantly, then your energy demands are going to come down, of course. So you do then need to think about eating for the work required. And if the work load has come down a lot, do you really need to be eating quite as much as you were previously? Maybe not. So it might be worth then doing a little bit of a kind of food diary and looking at your training. And we can talk about sort of periodizing your nutrition over the course of your training cycles as well. So obviously, if your training intensity has come right down, you're not doing those high intensity interval sessions, things like that, then maybe your need for lots of, you know, high octane fuel, your simple carbohydrates, you know, your gels, they might therefore come down. That need might come down. If it is a lot more low intensity based conditioning, you might be taking on more sort of complex nutritional sort of mix of carbs, fats, proteins. So things like, you know, real food. This might be time to experiment with other products. You know, I use the Supernatural Fuel Pouches, for example, which are, you know, it's real food blended up. The intensity is right down, so I can do my long runs on just that, versus when I'm putting more intensity in there, where I'll mix it in with more simple quick-acting sugars, so things like the Precision Fuel and Hydration gels, or energy drink as well. So it really depends on that sort of phase. But yes, it may well be that your overall daily nutrition demands come down, so therefore you need to maybe slightly slim down on those portion servings. You know, athletes love having the massive bowl of cereal in an evening before bed. Do you really need that?
I never do that. I didn't know that was a thing. I'll have to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, any athlete worth their salt is having cereal three times a day.
Oh, I don't really like cereal that much. It just seems a bit wheaty to me.
Well,
and it's expensive, apart from the porridge.
However, what I would also put in there is putting on a little bit of extra weight in the winter. So you said about your bear hibernating, you know, putting on that sort of winter fat is actually a good thing.
Oh, excellent. Because I looked in the mirror the other day and yes, that was definitely happening to me. Definitely, well, mama bear over here.
But that's it. It's healthy. We're supposed to do that. You know, if nothing else, we're storing some extra fats in there, which is going to help our immune system.
Brilliant. So, that is all I need to hear.
The weight off in the winter, you're more likely to pick up, you know, coughs and colds. So you're more likely to miss blocks of training. Carrying a couple of extra kg over the winter, but training consistently, that's what's going to pay off in the long run. Yeah.
And also you're training with a little bit of extra weight. So then come summer, when you shed it and shred, then
exactly. And then running's going to get easier again.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
So think about it as, you know, extra resistance training. It's not a bad thing carrying a few extra kg over the winter. As you start to ramp up into race mode, that will naturally start to come off again without even trying.
Oh, I was wondering why I was craving crisps every night. I was been like craving crisps, and I said to Steve, I just really fancy some crisps. And all we had was these hula hoops, and hula hoops are rubbish. They're not real crisps, are they? So I had a packet of hula hoops last night, and it was they're tiny. They've got even smaller than I remember. And I was like, I've got to go out and buy myself a big bag of those huge, lovely, like, you know, those Piper's crisp things. And I said, maybe it's because I'm hibernating, Steve. And Steve was like, yes, Claire, whatever. Now I've heard it from you. It's an actual thing. And I just want to be, everybody thinks this is really good, by the way. I'm just going to read you some chats on the live because I just want you to know. Liquor in the front says, this is really great, guys. Very, very informative. Sarah says, agreed. This is all super helpful. Neil Tim says, totally agree. This is great. And then, yes, people are like, yep, crisps are the best. I've been putting on a lot of weight and I feel better about it. So I think you've made everybody feel really good there, including me. That's great. Thanks
and
for that.
I'll just say about hula hoops. So one of the guys worked with Andy Morley, who's again multiple podium finisher on spine races. Hula hoops are his secret weapon for racing. Gets the salts in there, a bit of savoury.
Yeah.
Breaks up the sweetness of the gels. So yeah, that's his secret weapon, his packets of hula hoops and different flavours mixed together as well.
Hula hoops are great for races because you can just stick your fingers in the bag and they all come out with a hula hoop ring on, don't they? And you just bite them off like one by one. But other crisps, they grind up so small, don't they? You have to sort of like it's hard to get a fistful of those tiny little crisps once they've sort of broken themselves up. So yeah, I'm all for hula hoops on races, definitely.
Yeah, now you need to get a new crisp sponsor for your show.
Oh, a crisp sponsor, yes. If Saw would just make some ethical, eco-friendly crisps, then that would be absolutely fantastic. So we've got what is winter-based training. We've got when to do it. We've got how long you should do it. And it's okay to not... to drop a bit of fitness, it's okay to put on a little bit of weight. That will come off during the spring. And also we need it to be warm. Another thing I've just remembered is once I was training for the Costa Rica Coastal Challenge, and that was in February, and it was a very hot race. And my coach said to me, just like, if you lose some weight, you'll be colder on the race. So I went like all out. This was like the last time I ever tried losing weight, and massively backfired in the end because I got injured. But I got really skinny, like for me, skinny. Yeah. And I was freezing that winter. And I never usually run with like loads of layers on. I was running with like all these fleecy layers on that people buy, and I just was very, very cold, and it just wasn't me. It wasn't for me getting really thin over winter. So all about being a proper bear for winter.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the lightest I ever went for racing was sort of 6% body fat.
What's that in kilograms?
What am I, sort of 5'6" just maybe? And I went down to 56 kg.
Yes, so that's what I was 57 and I'm 5'7". So yeah, I went down to 57 kilograms. Too thin, 9 stone, not good.
I essentially, if I got cold, I couldn't warm up again. So I couldn't control my body temperature.
Yeah,
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It was like that too.
It's not healthy going that way.
How does Paula Radcliffe be that thin? She's that thin all the time.
Different. So we're maybe going down a different path here.
A slight segue. It's okay, it's all segue. Very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, weight, it does play a part somewhat in performance on the very shorter distance racing, but you always need to offset that with the health demands. And again, I think if we historically look back at athletics, they've gone, and probably other endurance sports as well, they've gone too light, compromised other health metrics. So this is where, again, you know, we may want to have a chat another time about things like relative energy deficiency. And the multitude of negative issues that come along with that. So I wouldn't be looking at historical athletes for inspiration on that one. Might be this work for them, but I'd be not getting too caught up about that one.
Yeah, well, they're elite anyway, so they're completely different anyway, and they probably have like a different bone structure to mere mortals like us.
And a lot more, you know, almost daily consultations with nutritionists, so making sure that they're not deficient in any particular areas. So, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
We've gone off on a tangent.
Yes, yes. Neil Timms has put really responsible messaging, Tim. So, yeah, everyone appreciates that. Yes, we have gone off on a tangent. So I was just wondering, like, in terms of winter-based training, is there anything you really shouldn't do? Like, is there anything really doesn't play a part in this winter-based training that you decide when it is, how long you want to do? Like, what shouldn't people be doing?
I suppose one thing is nothing at all. Because you're just therefore not going to be laying any foundations.
So you shouldn't be doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah, so, you know, that might be just your short off-season. But, you know, the base is just laying those foundations. What should you not be doing? That's an interesting one.
Like drinking too much, maybe? Like alcohol, partying hard until 6 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, I mean, that sort of, I suppose, goes, you know, without saying. there's a time and a place for all of that. And I suppose, you know, we're now approaching the holiday season, aren't we? So there will be parties happening, there will be social events happening, and that's fine. You know, in the grand scheme of things, that's okay. But of course, you don't want to be going completely off the wagon, because it just makes it harder to get back on the wagon again. You made me think of the old story about, I think it was Jan Ullrich, the cyclist, Tour de France cyclist. I'm pretty sure it was Jan, who in the winter, because obviously they have to be so strict with their nutrition and get really skinny for racing the Grand Tours. You know, he would come back from a bike ride in the winter months, get a big jar of Nutella, stick it in the microwave and melt it, then drink it with a straw. Imagine he then put on quite a lot of weight to the point where he was unrecognisable. And then he would work hard to try and get all this weight back off again.
Oh, wow.
So I suppose, you know, don't take it too far. You know, there's extremes, aren't there?
Yeah.
So the further you go away from your good habits and your good routines, the harder it is to then get back on it again. But the occasional indulgences, things like that, really not a problem.
Yeah.
Moderation.
Yeah, cool. I'm thinking also, like, would this be, like, not necessarily in the winter, but in a base training period, would it be a good time to, we've talked about strength training, but do other forms of cross training?
Like, absolutely.
There's a guy, Peter, one of my patrons. He says he's just started commuting to work on his bike, and he's doing that once a week now. So it's 20 kilometres round trip, and so he gets about 2 hours of biking in once a week. He's just wondering if he could replace a run with this bike session. Like, is it the equivalent of, say, 1 hour easy run maybe? Like, he's not doing any, like, crazy sprinting or climbing or anything like that, but he just wondered what you thought.
Absolutely. So, we mentioned before, obviously, the danger is you could be running and racing all year round, and that's not healthy. We need some downtime. If we look at some of the most successful endurance athletes, they will have a block of time, that base, where they're maybe doing a different sport. So if we look at our ultra runners, our mountain athletes, what are they doing in the winter? Ski mode. They're on skis.
Yeah.
So there was an interesting, if anybody's listened to some of Jim Walmsley's post-UTMB interviews, he obviously talked about this. He's obviously shifted away from the sort of USA running track type background, immersed himself over in France and immersed himself in the European approach, got himself into ski-mo, spending the winter doing ski-mo racing and then transitioning into running. So there's a big block where you're not pounding those legs. Look at Kilian Jornet. What's he doing? Ski mountaineering over the winter, climbing, things like that. Then taking that fitness back into running again.
Yeah.
Going back to Jim and in his sort of interview there, that was one of his kind of big takeaways was don't run all year round.
Yeah.
And, you know, his message back to the American athletes was, all right, you may not have the mountains to go ski-mo for 3 months of the year. Go mountain biking. Just drop the running right down and pick it up with some mountain biking. So we can maybe maintain a level of fitness, but through a different sport. And then we slowly transition so that other sport maybe starts to drop back down again and the running then picks back up again. So absolutely build some biking into it. I myself are increasing my bike volume over this winter phase and will probably maintain that throughout the season. I'm going to try a different approach for next year with more bike work in there. But yeah, absolutely. You know, if you're thinking about, so if I go back to the, let's say a spring marathon. Yeah. So if you're a runner that's looking to do a 3:30, 4 hour marathon, we want to build a level of fitness where exercising for 4 hours is not a problem for you. But if we ask you to do a regular 4 hour run over the winter, the chances are you're going to pick up some injuries. But go out there and do a 2-3-4 hour bike ride. You can build that metabolic fitness ready for when you then need to start transitioning into your marathon prep. So yeah, use the bike to build up the volume that you're then going to need for your running later on. It might be, again, I use the bike a lot for helping runners work on their cadence. So if you know that your running cadence is maybe a bit on the slow side, and that's something that's been commented on, that you need to try and turn your feet over a bit quicker, use the bike, do some high spin work, spin classes, things like that. Get the neuromuscular ability to spin your legs quicker on the bike, and then transition that into the running later on. It might be about working on some leg strength. So maybe you find climbing hills hard work on the legs. Do some leg strength on the bike, some low cadence, high resistance, pedaling there. So again, you can use the bike for some other specific areas that you need to work on.
Yeah, that's a really good shout. I'm thinking of taking one of my running sessions and doing it on the bike instead, just over November, just to ease this injury off a bit. Yeah. That sounds really good.
If I come back to the question was, you know, what do I replace it with?
Yeah, like, is it an equivalent of, like, is 2 hour on the bike like a 1 hour run, or like, because it is easier, isn't it, biking than running? I find it easier.
It is. And your heart rate is going to be lower on the bike for the same effort than it would be running.
Yeah.
So if you often it's back sort of maybe 10 beats lower. So if you're thinking, you know, my zone 1, zone 2, something running, my heart rate would be, let's say, 140 beats a minute. for a steady long run. Your steady bike, it might be 130 beats a minute. So you're not trying to match the same kind of heart rate because you're not overcoming gravity on the bike. But 130, you're still getting the same type of effort and training effect. There are people who sort of claim that a 90-minute bike is the same as a one-hour run, things like that. No, it's not. A 90-minute bike is a 90-minute bike. one-hour run is a one-hour run. 90 minutes outside is not the same as 60 minutes inside on the turbo. Because, yes, on the turbo, there aren't any kind of freewheeling downhill sections, things like that. I wouldn't try and kind of go, well, in order to get the same effects, I'm looking at X amount of minutes more biking versus they're different, and don't get too caught up in those differences.
Yeah, it's not like a swap in, swap out situation.
No, I mean, if we're really trying to nail down the sort of training stress scores, then we can use a lot of the historical data in an athlete's program. We can work out, depending on what their zones are, what training effect we're looking for. For most people, I wouldn't get too worried about that. If you're commuting on the bike and you're adding an extra hour of easy volume in there, fantastic. That's an extra hour of easy volume to and from work, rather than doing an extra sort of hours easy. Fine.
Yeah. So it's good for him to not do one run and do this bike as his like base training thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And then that might be something that then gets continued through to next season.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between last season and next season? Well, next season, your volume's now gone up by an extra couple of hours a week because you've got into the habit and the routine of cycling to and from work, and then you build your runs back on top of that as well.
Yeah. I really like the idea of that, because when I was training for the Coastal Challenge in Costa Rica, I had a training plan that had like 5 runs on it. And then I was training for a really fast half marathon, like to see how fast I could go whilst I was that thin, basically. And I was doing 5 runs a week, and I got injured like 2 weeks just before the half marathon. I still did like a good time that I was pleased with, but I got injured, and I always used to be quite a multi-sport athlete, and now I'm not. I just run, and I think now that you've said that, I think I am going to put more biking back into my program because I really like it. I've got a trainer, I can put Finley in it, and I love swimming as well. There's some chat on the live chat as well that says you've got to watch out for all this biking and things. Like Sean O'Keefe says, this is how you get sucked into triathlon.
And
Neil Tim said that's exactly what happened to him. And then Sean says he went the other way because it's so much cheaper to just run on the trails. And none of that heinous swimming. I really like swimming, though. It's the only thing that I can basically beat a lot of men on is the swim. So, like, on all the triathlons that I ever did, I'd come out the water, like, quite far ahead, and then all these men had just zoomed past me on the bike. It was really depressing. If only they did the swim at the end. So that's exciting. And there was one person here. GMeth said also, to minimise wear and tear, keep it varied, I'm thinking of doing more power walks up hills for a defined time period instead of grinding out a long run. Like, does that also sound like what could be part of a good winter base training plan?
Yeah, so, you know, we've talked about this before for ultra marathons. We want to work on our slowest speed and making our slowest speed a little faster. Mm-hmm. So if we think about, you know, the name ultra running is not really very accurate.
It's not for me. It's
ultra walking with a bit of jogging mixed in occasionally. So if we accept that walking is going to be a very large part of whatever we do with trail running, ultra running, whatever it might be, working on your hiking is also going to be a good use of your time.
Yeah.
So trying to improve how fast you can hike, how fast you can walk uphill. Yes, the impact forces of walking are significantly lower than running. You know, walking on the flat, you're talking about sort of 1.2 to 1.5 times your body weight. Running is going to be between 3 and 5 times your body weight, depending on how fast you're running. So yes, the impact forces are going to be less. So those stresses are going to be less. I would just pull up the kind of phrase wear and tear. We're trying to get rid of that phrase in the medical community. Because, I mean, running doesn't cause wear and tear.
Good. thank goodness.
So, if anything, it's going to strengthen the joints, it's going to strengthen the bones, things. The kind of some of those changes that we kind of historically we would call wear and tear are generally more kind of inflammatory driven by other lifestyle factors. Mm-hmm. But again, let's not get drawn down another tangent too much.
Well, I love a tangent. People love the tangents.
but let's just try and get rid of that phrase wear and tear.
Yes, because makes you think it's like a war of attrition, doesn't it? Like on your muscles, and you're just like, I've only got a finite amount of this cartilage or whatever it is, or this like synovial fluid, and now it's going to wear it away. It's not like you're an actual piece of equipment. You grow, don't you? And you like just making yourself run and having those impact forces on your body actually promotes the growth and the repair of stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the incidence of, you know, osteoarthritic changes is probably less in runners than it is in the general public. So, because you've maintained good joint health through those impact forces.
Yeah.
And the impact forces of running can promote cartilage repair. So, yeah. Anyway, let's not go down that rabbit hole. But yes, in incorporating more hiking, and again, you know, it comes back to time on feet, doesn't it? So as I said before about maybe using the bike to build up that metabolic endurance before you then start building in the running. Yeah, going out there and hiking for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 hours, you know, things like that. Yeah, brilliant. If it is your climbing speed, maybe it is just doing some climbs. Maybe it's getting on the treadmill even and doing tread hills. So, you know, just cranking it up to 10, 15% on the treadmill and hiking as fast as you can for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever it might be. Yeah, absolutely. That's all good conditioning.
Yeah, so there's a lot you can do with walking. And, you know, like maybe if you haven't got a 20-minute hill or a treadmill, you could just do a 3-minute hill and walk up it as quick as possible.
Yeah.
Or a subway or some stairs even. Like,
indeed, yes.
I know a guy who trained for the Bob Graham Round in Manchester and in London, like in the centre, so not very hilly at all. And he trained by going up a multi-storey car park with like five flights of stairs. And he said actually that was really good mental training as well because of the boredom of just going up and down. He knew that he would have what it took when he was surrounded by all the beautiful scenery finally doing his run. So he got through that.
That's it.
Okay, cool. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about the training plans that you've prepared for World Ninja Running next, like as part of the final kind of closing questions, Tim. So Tim has very kindly prepared some base training plans for World Ninja Running people for a very reasonable price on his Training Peaks website, his area of Training Peaks, the big training website there. So I've put the link in the film description below and you'll find it in the podcast show notes as well. Do you want to just like take us through what you've planned there, Tim? And you're going to put some more up there as well, like depending on what people want, aren't you?
Yeah, so obviously the question's coming through on your private patrons channel was sort of, what should I be doing? Giving some structure to this phase of the training cycle. So I just put up a few examples of maybe some things you might want to be working on. So there's some shorter blocks where you might be thinking, I just want to work on some skills and drills. Maybe want to work on some speed and just trying to get running a little faster before then introducing longer intervals, which might be then part of the next main training block. So, yeah, there's a few examples up there. There's some 8 weeks and 12-week plans, and I can copy over and add on some different examples depending on what your listeners want. So, yeah, drop us a line on your private Facebook group, and if there are some particular requests of styles, then I'll put some different examples up there.
Yeah, that sounds really great. Like I'm sure in the future you might do some strength training plans as well, like specifically for ultra runners and that kind of thing.
Yeah, a few of those. Yeah. If that's useful.
Yeah, and I think then I might make a video of some of them, you know, and people could sort of follow along with them But yeah, it's really useful to, it's just really useful to have it written down like that as a plan, like, and just listening to what you're saying and all the different decisions that you've got to make depending on your personal situation and how you train. It just makes me think how useful it is to get yourself a coach. Like, it really does take all of the guesswork out of everything.
Yeah. You know, so plans are brilliant, and obviously plans are better than having no plan at all. It'll help you structure what you're doing week by week. It'll make sure you don't do too much too quickly. It'll make you work on some areas that you wouldn't maybe normally work on. You know, the magic is in the work that you're maybe not doing. So it's focusing in on that. So that's where having a plan is really useful. And it gives you some accountability because there's the plan, it's on your calendar, that's what you're supposed to do today, which is great. But of course, no plan survives first contact with the enemy. And the enemy for us is life and family, things like that. So, you know, yes, there's those plans there, but you'll probably need to shuffle things around regarding, you know, what your personal demands are on your time. You know, for example, the plans are up there, but the days where the rest days are might not suit your weekly pattern. So you may need to move things around there. Well, what happens if you do, you know, get sick or you've got to look after the kids because the kids are off school or, you know, things like that. And obviously we've got Christmas coming up, which probably would fall in the block of some of these. So the next thing, the next step up from there is obviously then having a one-to-one coach. But obviously that is a bigger commitment, both in terms of resources, financial commitment, and time commitment. And that's not right for everybody. You know, for some people, it is just having a plan to follow, and that's absolutely fine. So it's a starting point. It's better than nothing. And it might be the gateway into then working with a coach on a one-to-one basis.
Yeah, or just like working with a coach for like a certain race. You know, like if you've got a goal, like if you really, really want to like do 100 miles or you want to get a certain time for some certain distance, then working with a coach just for like half a year or a year even might be like a worthwhile investment. But I just didn't even know that you had all these plans on Training Peaks, because you've got loads of plans, haven't you? Not just the Wild Ginger Running selection that you've made for this podcast. You've got loads of like, there's all the plans for 50K, 50 miles, 100 miles, and strength training work as well. So, and they're all really reasonably priced. So I just think I need to tell everybody about that and let everybody know, just so that they know, because you don't, like I was thinking, you just have to get a coach and that's it. And so you've either got like this nothing expense or like a huge outlay. So in between, you can just get a training plan from a qualified person like Tim here, and it'll be it's just fantastic. Like the moment you start training consistently, like to a plan, that you just see so much like massive performance benefits.
You know, there's plenty of training plans out there, whether it's in books, and obviously you've got a book coming out, and I've helped with putting some example training plans in your book.
The next book, the Ultra Running book, will be coming out next year, but Tim has been very influential. He's made basically all the training plans and I've just copied them.
Taking a training plan from a website, from a book, is all well and good, but is that right for your particular intensity? So the nice thing about the Training Peaks plans, and yes, there's my plans and there's plenty of other people out there who've got other training plans on the Training Peaks store, is using Training Peaks, as long as you've got your training zones correctly set up, so you've got your heart rate zones, maybe your pace or power, depending on what you're using, those plans will then automatically be calculated to your specific pace, intensity, whatever it may be. It will then talk to your watch and it'll tell your watch what the plan is, what the session is. So literally, you know, Monday, what am I doing? I'm going for a run. You click on run on your watch and it'll go, this is your session today.
Wow.
And it'll literally take you through it. And if you try and run too hard,
it'll beep at you.
The heart rate's too high, bring it down a touch. Or if you're not working hard enough, it'll give you a kick on the backside and tell you to work a bit harder.
So it'll keep you
in the right intensity zones.
Yeah, I'm just imagining a watch with one of those big fingers, you know, like on Gladiator when they had the pointy big foam fingers. It comes out of the watch and just whacks you on the bum when you're not running fast enough. Just too much imagination there. Someone needs to invent that. Ah, well, that is fantastic. I'm really glad that you've put these training plans together for us. And I'm really glad that I found them as well, because I like to pitch a halfway entry level drug to people.
It's a gateway
drug, yep, to coaching. It's just so much appreciated. Everybody just really likes these chats on the channel, and it's just really nice of you to spend this hour with us once every month or so. So yeah, I think we should all give Tim something back by buying one of his training plans. Brings me on to the closing bit, which is the winter kit bit. So if you've got the right kit, then it will be really easy to go out and train in the winter. So
absolutely.
If you have a look at the SOAR running kit, because we have got that amazing 15% discount there for the code, which you'll find in the film description below and in the podcast show notes. So I've just popped a little picture up. If you're watching on the YouTube channel, there's lots of different running stuff from SOAR there. And I am wearing the Windbreaker at the moment, which is a lovely fleecy lined, very comfy, very warm layer for winter. And then when you get too hot, you just take it off and tie it around your waist. It's brilliant. So I've been enjoying wearing that. Hope you find something that will fit you from SOAR for the 15% discount that I've managed to wrangle from them. That concludes the podcast.
I'll jump in there as well, yeah, and give Scarpa some love. So
Scarpa,
winter footwear, really important.
Yes.
And Scarpa have produced their Spin ST. ST meaning soft terrain, so massive lugs, really good grip. So if you're out there in the muddy trails, check out the Spin ST. Or there's also, for the more kind of mountains where you need a bit more kind of rock protection, there's the Calibra ST as well. That's with the new BOA lacing system.
Oh, nice. That's you got those? Have you been trying that?
Yeah. So that's really useful as well. Mm. Have a check out that. And in fact, I think the picture you've used for the kind of banner, not banner, what am I looking for? What's the word I'm looking for?
Thumbnail.
For this
YouTube thumbnail.
There's myself and Joe up in the lakes running in the snow. But yeah, they were the sort of prototype shoes that I was in last winter, the Spin STs. So yeah, really, really good. Mud, snow, anything.
Awesome. So get yourself some...
In the Nature Streets, I believe Kong Running are doing some demo sessions. So you can go there, you can try the shoes, and you've got a chance to win a pair of Spin STs there. So if you're in the Lake District or the Northwest, go and check out Kong Running.
Kong Running, yep, and you can try before you buy there. That's always really good, isn't it? A really good shout.
Yeah.
Awesome. So get yourself a pair of Scarpa shoes and kit by SOAR, and you'll be completely prepared. And some supernatural fuel as well. Everything beginning with S. We don't like to be sponsored by anyone that's not beginning with S here on the Wild Ginger Running. And Tim, how can we follow you? How can we find out more about what you're doing next?
Easiest place for sort of running stuff is the Instagram. So Tim Piggott, HP3. So you can check me out there. I'm sure you can stick a logo in somewhere or link somewhere. Check out the website, hp-3.co.uk.
Awesome. So we've got a chat book next on the 5th of December. We've talked a little bit about maybe winter motivation, but you know, it's up for grabs. If any patrons want to send in any suggestions for what me and Tim should chat about next time, then just give me a shout on the Patreon Facebook group or in Patreon itself. But thank you so much, Tim. It's always really great to chat to you. And goodbye, everybody. Have a good winter base training.
Cheers, everyone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.